Hello, everybody. My name is Kenton DeYoung, and I'm sitting here with my co-host, Dylan Fairman.
Hey.
And this is Unsolved Canadian Mysteries. Dylan, it's been a little bit.
Yes, it has been a while.
I think our last one was about the Oak Island treasure.
Yeah, the pirates.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to do that
No, I didn't. But it's okay. It went well. But we got some good comments on that.
Oh, really?
One person, I guess I forgot my mom had been to Roslyn Chapel. So,
oh, okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
She wanted to talk all about like the connection there to Prince Sinclair and everything.
Yeah.
And we got some good feedback on Instagram as well. Kobe from Toronto said that we are binge-worthy and he loves our show.
Binge-worthy.
That's good.
Binge-worthy.
And we got one person who didn't like our Tamara Keepness podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we got some hate mail, which means we are doing good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh, like she didn't like what we did, or she doesn't like that we're talking about it.
She didn't like me. She didn't like my happy attitude towards such a serious topic.
Oh, wow.
and I got a couple facts wrong too. So
oh really?
My bad.
Oops!
Not the first time. Our very first podcast, we got the guy's name wrong the entire time. So
yeah. What about Granger Taylor? Yeah. Thank you for your input. It is appreciated. Negative and positive.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. What about me? What did I do wrong? People tell me I swear too much. I don't think. Actually, no. I did swear on the last one, but I edited them out. There was actually one point. I don't think, maybe you didn't catch it, but there was a point where I totally said fuck, and then I just substituted it with piss or poopies.
Okay.
Or poop. Yeah, because I dropped the F-bomb, and then a few seconds later, like just for my future self, I said poopies, and then I took the audio from that and I put it over the thing. It doesn't even match my mouth.
So we got some good feedback, got some bad feedback, but that's okay. That's all that matters. We got feedback.
It's fine.
People are listening, and we're happy. We're thankful. Are you ready for another true crime episode?
Oh, yes.
This is number 3 or 4, yeah. Are you ready for one of Canada's oldest still open investigations?
Yes.
All right.
I'm ready.
So, story starts kind of way back when, in the 1700s in Russia.
Okay.
Kenton,
this is Canadian.
I know, we're getting it. It's coming.
Okay,
it's,
I'm just warning you.
It's coming over.
Okay.
There is a religious sect. There was and still is a religious sect in Russia called the Doukhobors. Now, the Doukhobors are a non-secular organization of people who don't believe in the government. Like, not like they don't believe it exists, but they just don't recognize it. They don't recognize structured church. They are just a bunch of communal people who live together and they farm and work and do labor. So they don't believe in like the idea of there being like a pope and there being bishops and cardinals and all that stuff. They just believe in doing the Lord's work through themselves.
Mm.
The God speaks through us and our actions, okay? No need for all that structure, mumbo jumbo, just people doing things. So they also believe in the Bible, but they believe in other texts as well. So they're a little bit different than most religious groups you think about. And some things that they do differently is they don't pay taxes. They don't donate grain to the Russian's emergency grain supply.
Okay. Right.
They don't subscribe, they're not part of the military. They don't pledge allegiance to the Tsar when they had a Tsar. That kind of thing. So they don't pledge allegiance to the government or anything like that. And this obviously causes some problems. So they started up in 1700s, I think 1710, something that's kind of when the Doukhobors were founded. But our story kind of takes place, starts off in 1864. So we're getting kind of close now to when Canada was a country.
Yeah.
So this individual's name, the leader died, and the wife took his place. And the wife's name is, my best here, right? Lucera Gubanova.
Gubanova.
She died in 1886. Okay. At this point, there is a problem because they didn't have any kids.
Mm.
So there's no one to become the new leader of the Doukhobors.
Mm.
So she knew this as she was getting older and knew she was going to die. So she picked her, I think it's her secretary or her understudy, Peter Berrigan, to take his place.
Peter.
And some people said, okay, you know what? Gubanova picked Peter Berrigan to be the leader, and that's what we should follow. Others said, well, you know, the old leader, Gubanova's, they had, like, a brother. Why don't we go with that way? So that caused a break in the group, a fracture, right? Some said we should go with Peter Berrigan, the chosen one that they picked. Let's say we should go with the family line.
Mm-hmm.
So as they were going to pick this leader at a big convention, like a big, they all got together and to pick. As they were doing that, the Russians barged in and arrested leaders and hauled Peter Vergin and his entourage and followers, some of them, to Siberia, where they were imprisoned. I don't know for what charge, but whatever. That's what they were imprisoned for, right? So now these Duke of Boers, they were kind of spread out because they kind of got attacked by the Russians and they kind of spread out. But they were very unhappy with this and they wanted to stage protests and be disagreement with this. So they started staging protests, which was when they burned all of their weapons. To say they will not be part of the military, they will not participate in the government, they have nothing to do with the Russian and what Russia does. So of course, Russia made a big fuss and the international community got involved and it was determined that the Duke of Boers can leave Russia. They can just go. They don't want them part of this. They can just go. The Russian government finally allowed and said, you guys can go, and went on three things. One, you can go. Number two is you can go on your own dollar. We're not paying for you to relocate. And three, the prisoners that we have, they can go when their prison sentence is over. Mm. Pretty much leave or join us. You can't do this anymore. So some of them moved to Cyprus, but a lot more other ones moved to Canada.
Yeah.
Cyprus. So,
where's that?
So I should talk about geography. So they were in part of Ukraine originally.
Okay.
But then they got moved down to kind of like Georgia. I think it's Azbekistan or something like that. It's right beside Georgia. Below that is Turkey. And then Cyprus is on the water across from Turkey.
Okay.
So over there. So not that far, but a little ways away from where they were. Leo Tolstoy. What is it?
When did Turkey become Turkey?
So Turkey was the Ottoman Empire until the First World War.
Yeah.
So it was... like we're going into the 1900s, so it was the Ottoman Empire, but it was known as Turkey too.
Okay, so I see. Oh wait, so were some people calling it Turkey back then, or were they? They probably all said the Ottoman Empire back then.
They probably did, but the documents I read just said Turkey because that's what it's called now.
Right, that's like I see. Okay,
because it wasn't that much different. I think they just lost some land in Africa when they collapsed.
Okay,
I don't know that history that well.
Right.
So Leo Tolstoy, do you know Leo Tolstoy?
Never heard of this person.
Believe he wrote War and Peace, the super thick Russian novel. He was a philosopher. He was an author. He was a very important person in the 1900s, early 1900s, late 1800s in Russia. He was like a philosopher and an important person. And he helped a lot of these Duke of Boers resettle in Canada because they didn't have money, right? So they settled across the prairie provinces in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Alberta. The government had this program in place where they had a land program where new people would come across and they would give them really discount land so they could set up a city or a colony or a town or whatever and kind of start going because they were trying to colonize the West, right? And it was only because of a recent 10 years ago to this time issue with the Mennonites that they added a clause in there that people could live in communes as opposed to individual houses.
Mm.
So before that, it was like your family, you have to get one house. Your family, you get one house.
Okay.
But now it's like, okay, you're a family of 60 or a family of 200, you could have one property.
Okay. Right?
So the Mennonites, I think it was ones that kind of added in this law, and then the Duke of Boers took advantage of it because that's how they lived as a group, as a collective. And they lived across the prairie provinces. In 1902, Peter Vergin, the leader, he's also known as Peter the Lordly Vergin.
The Lordly?
Yeah, yeah.
He's very lord-like.
I don't think he's anything much like Jesus, except he had a beard. But
that's very Jesus-like.
But he was important to them. He was their leader, right?
Mm.
So that's why he had that name. So he came over in 1902, and he finally met his people in Canada. And there's a town where they kind of came together and they built him a house. It's this giant, four-story plantation-style building where Peter Vergin and his family lived.
I see.
And the town is called Vergin.
Vergin,
like his name. It's in Saskatchewan. The house is still standing. Now,
have you been there?
I have, yeah.
Cool.
It was really cool to see this turn-of-the-century house. But they have all this, they have a lot of art in there, on the walls. But it's not made with paint or with parchment. It's made with human hair.
I think I say blood, but hair is still weird.
Yeah, but it was a lot of hair. And it's dyed, so I don't know if it's they had different colored haired people or they dyed the hair with berries or something.
They probably would have had paint back then.
Yeah, I guess. But then you can just paint a picture. Not include.
I suppose.
I don't know. But it was a very cool house. And they have lots of stuff there about how Leo Tolstoy was involved in the immigration process and Peter Vergin and his involvement. And then, of course, what happens to Peter Vergin later. Spoiler.
Oh.
So at this time, we're going into... He comes over in 1902. And his son, who he hasn't seen because he was in jail for quite some time, came over in 1905 to meet his father, right?
Okay.
But what he met was when his son, also named Peter Berrigan, of course.
I feel like people did that a lot.
Yes. They have a different initial, but I don't remember if it's P or V, and that also comes off hard on the podcast. So they're both Peter Berrigan. I'll call one the son and one Peter Berrigan. Yeah. The son said that his dad was a corrupt crook who was just interested in young women and not in this place and being a proper Duke of War leader.
Oh, that's a nice opinion to have of your father.
Yeah, right. Also with the knowledge that he would be the one replacing his father if his father was to perish.
Oh, that's good. Yep. Yeah. Can't wait to replace my loser dad.
So as the Duke of Wars were settled in Canada, there was another split amongst them. Some of them wanted to embrace the new world. They wanted to embrace more modern ideas. Like Peter Berrigan wanted people to farm by hand. They didn't want animals to dig up the land for them. They wanted them to go out and dig up the land and plant the seeds themselves.
That's a great idea, but can't we just use the horses? It makes the things a lot easier.
But Peter didn't like that idea. Mm-hmm. So there was a split, and some people went with that idea, the animals. Some of them stayed with Peter's ideas and did it by hand.
I wonder who did better.
Right? Yeah. So then from his group of people, there was another split. Those who were zealots. Is it pronounced zealots?
I think it is zealots.
Yeah, zealots. And they were very hardline Berrigan followers. They took everything he said to a T. So much for that they were actually quite violent. And with his ideas was that they lived together, they homeschooled together, everyone kind of was one collective family. And they took that very extreme by like burning down other schools and protesting and just being chaotic. So he actually like exiled them. So we had three groups, okay?
That's how you make a cult.
Right? That's right, you kick out the people who disagree with you and who agree with you a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And these people were called the Freedomites.
Freedomites.
Yeah, or the Sons of Freedom.
The Sons of Freedom.
Yeah. Going into the 1900s, one of the big things that happened in Canada was the First World War.
Ah.
Right?
Big.
Well, it didn't happen in Canada, but it was happening in Europe, and we were involved. So, of course, they asked the Duke of Boris, did you want to fight in this war? And they said, no, we are pacifists. We don't go to war. And that, of course, caused some problems with the local people who lived in Prairie Provinces, that their sons are going to fight over in Europe. These guys are from Europe, and they're not going to fight.
Yeah.
So that causes a little bit of problems. And, of course, you know, the Duke of Boris get the special treatment because, you know, they're immigrants and all that. Mm-hmm. So there were some issues there. When the war ended, there was a lot of feelings of unhappiness with the Duke of Boris here. And in Europe, in Russia, the communists had overthrown the Bolsheviks, and they started up the new country, the USSR. So they asked the Duke of Boris. They said, you know, the Bolsheviks are gone. Your penalty, that you have to exile, is no longer valid. Did you want to come back here and live in the USSR? And they said, no, we're good. We don't want to do any of that anymore. We're fine here, right? So that caused a bit of a problem because the USSR is trying to rebuild from the Russian Revolution, right?
Right.
Trying to, you know, reestablish government, trying to reestablish a means of production, food, trying to bring in other countries to form the Union. So they wanted these people to come in, and they didn't come. Back in Canada, the Duke of Boris realized that Saskatchewan and the Prairie Provinces have a very harsh winter.
No shit.
Yes. A lot harsher than Georgia and that part of Europe. So Peter Berrigan decides he's going to build a property out in British Columbia. And he's going to relocate all these people there instead, where they can plant fruits and vegetables without worrying about them freezing. They have a longer growing period. They have a better area.
More rain.
Yes. And also, because Canada was expanding westward, more people were coming in. Mm. And Peter was worried that these people would come in with these ideas that would make the Duke of Boris less pure. Because they wanted to be these pure religious individuals.
Oh.
Right? So he was working on building up a new colony in BC. So he often frequented between BC and Saskatchewan, his home Berrigan and other places in the Prairie Provinces, and take the train back and forth.
No, Kenton, I'm just starting to think that cults might not be a good idea.
No, typically they don't end well.
Gosh.
And I wish we had more cult stories in Canada. They all happen on the other side of the border. So, October 29th, 1924. Peter Berrigan is heading out back towards BC. He's on the Columbia and Western Railway. That's what it's called now. And the line between Castlegar and Grand Forks. I don't know any of that geography, but it's people who want to look it up. That's where it is. He's near the town of Farron on this train. So he's on this train. With him is, and it's, depending on the source you read, either it's his secretary or it's his lover,
okay,
who is either 17 or 20, while he is about 64.
They're in love.
I was thinking about that too. In 1924, if you're a 17-year-old, you're probably already married anyway.
Yeah.
Sure, the age gap is weird, but you're already usually a married woman by 17 in 1924, or around there anyway. So they're on this train heading to the West Coast. And as they are just near the town of Farron, their coach explodes.
Explodes?
Giant fireball.
Explodes?
Yes. The roof of the train car flies off.
How come?
All the windows are gone. The entire train car just obliterates.
I don't get it.
The investigation begins. What caused this?
Oh my God.
So, first thing, CN said, maybe it's us. Maybe we had an issue. Maybe there was a gas leak and someone lit a match and the car blew up because it was such a big explosion. That's a possibility, right?
Right, yeah. You could confine space. Gas can build up and then...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
People smoked cigarettes indoors back then. Someone lit a pipe and poof, there goes the place.
Poof.
They determined that wasn't the cause.
What?
So then it goes to the Canadian government to investigate this, right? The RCMP. And, of course, they're going through the wreckage, right? And they find Peter's burnt and mangled body. He's missing a leg. And they determine there's other people. Everyone on that coach died in this explosion. It wasn't just Peter and his mistress or secretary. There's also a politician on that as well. And several other people who haven't quite figured out who they all were yet. But there's about, I think there's about 14 people that died on that train.
I bet it's hard to identify people back then. Mm-hmm. If you're like, you know, explosion. You're probably pretty unrecognizable for...
Yeah.
The most part.
Yeah. Maybe you know who's on because of train tickets, but someone can change cars.
Oh, that's true.
No, yeah, you could have someone from car B going to car A and a car A blows up. Suddenly there's another body there.
Yeah, but I assume they probably keep like a record log of people. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
It's all right. So they begin this investigation and they find that in this wreckage of this train car is a parts of a clock, like a wind-up clock. A clock that you would use if you were to have a bomb set to a timer.
Or someone just had a really big wristwatch, Kenton.
Yes, true. So the theory that they're going with is that someone put a suitcase with a bomb in it and a timer behind Peter Vergen's seat on the coach. So that when it blew, he'd be the first to make sure he's gone. So they were able to trace back these clock parts to a clock manufacturer, I think, in Vancouver.
Okay.
And they interviewed him. And they said, okay, do you know anything about this? And they left. They were going to come back another time. When they came back, he was gone.
Like the CEO or like the...
The shop owner.
Okay.
It was like an individual shop.
Oh, it was a small shop.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he was gone.
That is... Okay. It's a big thing there.
Right. The idea... The question now is who maybe hired the shopkeeper or who was behind this? The first theory was Peter Vergen Jr., the son. He didn't like what was happening with the Duke of Boris, didn't like his dad. He thought that was corrupt. He knew, and he was right, when his dad died, he would take control of the Duke of Boris. Mm. So maybe he did it to try and right in the Duke of Boris path.
Right.
The next are the Freedomites, who were already known for blowing stuff up.
Oh.
Right, they already had that skill set.
Mm-hmm.
They liked Peter Vergen, but he did kick them out. So, you know. That's some cause to get rid of him, and maybe they feel he's gone off the wrong way and they know the true path.
That would be a good way to frame people, though. Figure out how, what they expertise in, and then use that to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Framing!
Yeah.
Yep. The freedom people.
The Freedomites.
Freedomites.
Thank Sons you. Of Freedom, yeah. The next one is it could be the Soviets.
Come back.
They weren't happy that he wouldn't want to come back. You know, they needed this, they needed him, they needed the Duke of Boris, he was already a prison once in Russia, so, you know, the Soviets had a history of knocking people out like that, so, but to do that would be an international assassination attempt, also killing a Canadian politician.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing, right?
Yeah, but it already happened, and everyone's worried about that one, so we wouldn't care about Canadian one that much.
Yeah.
That is how the first war started, right?
Yeah. Not with the Russians, but yeah.
France.
Francis Ferdinand.
Yeah.
Killed.
It's a great band.
Is it the king of Serbia? No, it was Austria-Hungary went into Serbia.
Yeah, Austria-Hungary.
And they shot him. Yeah. The Black Hand killed him, yeah.
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 So, and then they had poison pellets. What's that shit called? Starts with an S.
Cyanide?
Yeah.
Cyanide starts with a C, doesn't it?
I'm dyslexic, Kenton, okay. So do you want to make fun of that even more?
No, I don't.
Maybe we'll piss off that girl again.
Okay, all right. The last potential person who was behind this was the Canadian government. The idea here was that the Duke of Bors were a threat. I mean, they didn't want to pay taxes, didn't want to join the military. Some of them were causing arson attacks and protesting nude. That's what they did. So
impactful.
That's one of the theories, that the Canadian government just wanted them gone. They served their purpose. The West has been colonized, and now they're causing problems. I guess in the last one was that Peter Varigan, although he was establishing a new colony in BC, he has also bought some property down in the States. And his ideas of his Russian ideas, his anti-religious ideas, those kind of things, they were very counterintuitive to the Klan that was big in the 20s, the KKK.
Yeah.
And there was some concern from the KKK that he was going to bring their communist ideas down to the United States. So maybe they were behind the attack.
Yeah.
That one is kind of a stretch.
Yeah.
I would say it's probably, well, what do you think? Who do you think?
Oh, I know.
Okay, you know who it is.
I put it all together.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah.
All right. Let's just first say, why does it have to be just one of the things you suggested?
Okay, sure. All right.
What is the easiest way for Russia to get back at him? Hire people that don't like this guy in the first place, who specialize in a particular way of doing things, and who are already pissed off because they don't have any animals to do the work.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Russia paid the Freedom Sons of Anarchy in horses to assassinate Peter to the point of him losing a leg.
All right, cool. I like it.
In Canada, watched.
Yeah, yeah. In 1959, an author is looking into the story, and he asks the RCMP detachment and Nelson, I think, or somewhere out there, if you can see the file, see what they have, right?
Mm.
And he was informed, no.
No,
because the case is still being investigated. Okay, you know, it's been 30 years. Sure. Okay, all right. Another reporter requests, author requests in the 70s to get access to these files. Also no, because it's still being investigated. To this day, it's still being investigated.
Still under investigation.
They CBC requested information from them, and they said that they can't provide it because it could cause some conflicts with the names on the document. They might cause some issues if people knew what they were doing, what happened. So I'll tell you what I think.
Oh dear.
I think the Canadian government did it because they knew that the Freedomites were a terrorist threat. Also possibly a communist threat at the time, right? But we also know in the 50s, I think it was 50s and 60s, the Canadian government did something called Operation Snatch, where they took kids out of these Freedom Mike communities and put them into like a residential school program.
Yeah.
To educate them, make them think correctly about how things are run in this country. So I think the government took out Peter Varigan and then went after like the subgroups, which were the Freedomites and whoever else, to get these kids out and kind of end that whole idea of the Duke of Bors lineage. That's what I think.
Well, but isn't it easier to blame Russia?
Oh, always. 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 Huh. What's great about Duke of Bors is they're still around.
Cool.
And they still have, like, Varigan is still a town, and they still do tours of Varigan, and they actually have lots of places around Saskatchewan. You can go and see the Duke of Bors.
Do they have an Instagram?
They have a TikTok. They're doing stuff this summer. They're excited for people to come down.
That's super cool.
They're looking for summer students.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they're still around.
Cool.
So the case is still open. They don't have an answer. Maybe the government does, but they're not letting us know. I think it's one of those things, like, so after, another example, after the Second World War, the American, a lot of Nazi scientists came to America, and they were studying, in particular, twins and triplets.
Okay.
And the idea was, let's say twins or triplets end up at an orphanage. They will arrange it so that one twin or triplet goes to a wealthy family, one will go to a poor family, one will go to a middle-class family, and then they will observe these kids and see how they change, see how they do health-wise, mental health-wise, academically, jobs, that kind of thing. And they will observe them their entire lives. And this came out, I think it was in the 90s, that this was still going on. They were still following these people. There is a, they haven't released the documents, the files, but they said that they will once all the participants are gone, once they've all passed away. So it's kind of like they're waiting, right? And I think it's this case that they will release this information, or they'll be willing to release it once these kids who were part of Operation Snatch are all gone.
Well, we'll find out eventually.
Yeah, eventually, yeah.
That's cool. There's hope.
Yeah, there's hope. That's right. Maybe this will be solved one day.
If you're listening 50 years from now, do a quick Google.
Yeah, let us know. Find out yourself. Yeah. So, think of that one.
That was dope.
It was a little more normal.
Yeah. No. It doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be crazy. It doesn't need to be crazy. The further away in time it is, the easier it is to hear.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that this one is still ongoing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kenton. That was awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dylan. That was a good one.
That was a good one. And sorry for the long wait.
We have a lot more exciting ones coming. Mm. And I promised Kobe, I think it was, from Toronto. We have a Toronto one coming up. Cool. Not next, but the next one.
Oh. You gotta wait.
Gotta wait.
You gotta wait, bro.
It's a good one, though. Promise.
Yeah, it's about the Toronto Raptors.
You're not... It's not about the team, but it is about the something dinosaur. Like a raptor, yeah.
Something like a raptor. Something like a raptor. Yeah. Like a big ostrich murder.
Well, you have to wait. Well, thank you so much, Dylan. It was fun. And thanks, everyone, for listening and tuning in. This has been... My name is Kenton DeYoung. I'm sitting with my co-host, Dylan Fairman. This has been Unsolved Canadian Mysteries.